This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Work takes up such a massive part of our lives, whether we're clocking on, chasing more hours, or perhaps worrying about what comes next. We like to think jobs are about skills and effort, but for many people, there's more going on beneath the surface. A new Australian study is asking hard questions about work, identity, and opportunity. And not surprisingly, things are far from equal. So how does it show up in everyday working life? We're joined by Dr. Dee Tomic from Monash University. Dee, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
When we're talking about work participation here, what does that mean in day-to-day terms?
Yeah, so work participation we can measure in different ways. So obviously the labour force participation is whether someone is actively looking for work, and then when they're actively looking for work, are they employed? In what industries, occupations, capacities? So obviously there's very different types of working arrangements, and whether people are engaging in the types of work that they're looking for and the amount of work that they're looking for and the working circumstances. So there's a lot of factors that go into occupational health, which is our area that we're looking at in this study. And yeah, so we've looked at various measures of work.
Dee, when you looked at the data, what patterns or I suppose differences stood out to you around who gets work, who stays in it, and who drops out? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so just to circle back about what this particular study was really looking at. So we used data from a nationally representative study called the HILDA survey, which tracks about 14,000 people. It's been running ever since around 2000 every year across Australia to look at all kinds of things. So HILDA stands for Household Income, Labour and Dynamics in Australia. And we had noticed a notable oversight in LGBTQ+ work participation among this survey. And so we decided to conduct this study, which is the first Australian study, to look at work participation among the LGBTQ+ community using nationally representative data. And the most striking findings that we found were that even after we accounted for things like age, education, even socioeconomic background, LGBTQ+ people still had lower workforce participation, so lower actually being active in the labour force, higher unemployment, and were less likely to work in various industries, including manufacturing and construction. I can go more into some specific findings if you'd like, but because employment is such a major social determinant of health, we really kind of highlighted how these inequalities matter not only for people's financial security and their job security, but also in terms of their long-term mental health, physical health, and social well-being.
Were you surprised by the findings?
Not necessarily, but yes and no. Obviously, we know that, you know, there's long-standing evidence about things like workplace discrimination, exclusion, and minority stress among our community in workplaces. However, this hasn't directly really been translated, especially not in Australia, to tangible kind of evidence. And so really seeing things like, you know, gay and lesbian Australians as well as bisexual Australians were more than twice as likely to be unemployed as heterosexual Australians was quite striking.
Dee, you've got me thinking going back to my early career in sort of engineering and technical roles, mm-hmm. and it was so hostile, the environment. I absolutely hated it, that I wanted to jump careers because of it, and it played up, you know, my health suffered as a result of that. Mm-hmm. So it has a big impact on someone, doesn't it, if you do not feel comfortable in that work environment?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, work is a major, as I said, social determinant of health that's really quite underrecognized. You know, we think of work as, you know, it's always through the lens of providing people financial security and then kind of having the lives that they want. But work environments really dictate so many aspects of our lives and our health. And I'm not surprised to hear about your experiences. Yeah.
Are there certain industries that are worse than others?
Yeah, so we really found that the kind of manufacturing, utilities, construction were really the worst, with non-heterosexual workers as well as transgender and gender diverse workers far less likely to be employed in these industries, very likely because of the kind of very cis male dominated kind of industries those are, and the expectations and norms that they kind of, you know, have.
I wonder how, like, it'd be great to know how many LGBTIQ plus people are working in industries that they don't want to work in, but they're perhaps qualified to work in other industries because of the environment of that particular industry.
Yeah, that's certainly a really interesting question. Obviously, we were doing an analysis of secondary data, so we couldn't directly identify cause or really explore this in further depth. But we are actually, I'm now currently, we have funding from Pride Foundation Australia. We're currently running a big study that's about to launch called the Pride at Work Study, where we really are trying to tease out some of those reasons that people, that LGBTQ plus people are experiencing these things at work. So stay tuned for that, I guess.
So people are choosing certain jobs because it's shaped by whether a workplace feels safe or welcoming rather than something that they want to do.
Yeah, look, that's very likely. I think there's both, you know, in terms of the kind of what we see in terms of the industries, I think there's both obviously direct exclusion and stigma from the perspective of the employers, but also I think what we sometimes call anticipatory avoidance, where people will actually deliberately, even if they have those qualifications and the workplace might actually be inclusive for them, they steer away from it for the perception that it will be hostile.
Dee, how many people were avoiding work altogether in your study because of experiences that they'd had in the workplace?
Again, we weren't able to delineate in this study avoidance per se. However, as I've mentioned, they were. We did find that especially non-heterosexual workers, so especially bisexual workers, had some of the worst findings, were less likely to be in the labour force, so actively not looking for work, and more likely to be unemployed. Now, why that is, we can't say with this kind of nationally representative data set. But yeah, something we're really keen to explore in future research.
We're chatting with Dr. Dee Tomich from Monash University about work participation and inequality in Australia. We'd like to know, have you ever stayed in or avoided a job because the workplace culture didn't feel safe or welcoming? 0427 569 949. Dee, I'm wondering, were there certain industries or sectors that LGBTIQA+ people gravitated towards?
So we kind of had the baseline as other, right? So the kind of service-based industries that comprise the majority of workers. And then we compared other sectors, so things like manufacturing, construction, as well as utilities, water, waste services. And these were all, we very much did notice a pattern, even when sometimes the numbers were too small in some of the specific sexual and gender groups, that we're steering away from those industries towards more kind of desk-based, service-based jobs.
Dee, your study raises questions, doesn't it, about job security and hours? It's not just about the paycheck, is it?
Of course, yeah. And we did also highlight really that some of these more stable industries, often in terms of job security, were the ones that unfortunately LGBTQ plus people were not participating in as much as, you know, the remainder of the population.
If someone's listening and perhaps manages teams or runs a workplace in one of the industries that isn't so welcome, what should this research prompt them to reflect on?
Really, how they're showing up as a workplace, I think, is important. Do they have visibility? Do they have safe spaces for do they really have a culture from when you see walk into the workplace, is it a place that feels friendly? Is it, you know, do they have initiatives like for Pride or, you know, pronoun badges or anything like that? And yeah, I think also that's kind of at the more visible workplace level. But then of course, when you think about, you know, recruitment and promotion practices, are they factoring in, you know, people's identities and lives? So I think, yeah, there are definitely factors in both the workplace level and on a more systemic level that need to really come into play here.
Kristen Frankston is a construction worker. The jokes never stop. You learn to keep your head down. I think that's really sad that you have to do that.
Yeah, really awful to hear. Sorry about
that. And Leah says, I chose a lower paid job just to protect my mental health. And that's what you were saying, that the health impact is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, and yeah, it is. It's something that, you know, very parallels previous research that we've seen about, you know, people's experiential kind of studies at work. So, yeah, it's really Yeah, now manifesting in this national study that we can kind of see that that's happening on quite a large scale. So yeah, it's really
it's quite concerning. Good that you've highlighted it though. And if anyone's listening and they perhaps feel a bit unseen or stuck at work, what do you hope that they take from your research?
That this is an area that we're not ignoring. Obviously, I coming into this area of occupational health, I was quite shocked at, given how much I'd perceived that over the past decade or two, especially, that workplaces had started to become more, inclusive and have visible, things to really highlight that they are welcoming to members of our community. However, I was really shocked to see that the state of research is really lagging. And so our group and there are various other researchers, in Australia and abroad who are really pushing, this forward. So yeah, if there are people who are listening, that, just to be aware that, this is something that we're really actively pursuing to make sure, and we're, engaging with governments and with businesses to kind of try to make sure that the research is being reflected in their policy.
Tony says, I'm now 70. My heyday was the 80s. I had two lives, gay, social, and everything else was discreet, including family. I still don't feel comfortable to say my partner and I. That's really sad, but it's true. It's a reality for some people. Dee, in terms of, I'm just thinking about employers. Like if you're a business owner and you're missing out on potentially some of the greatest workers, aren't you? The greatest talent.
Yeah.
By not having this culture.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And when you are engaging them in the workplace, you may not be getting their full, productivity and their full ability to engage in the workplace. I think, often the work, some of the more, qualitative research that has come out has really shown that the work environment is often one of the most hostile environments for LGBTQ plus people. Just like you mentioned with that person who called in, mentioned even unable to say my partner and that kind of thing. So really that exclusion, it's those subtle things that can really cumulatively have an effect on, work participation. And we know that the work social environment is so critical to, how someone actually performs in their job and is able to stay in their job and really, thrives in their job. So yeah, really interested in other things, we weren't able to explore because we hadn't really had enough follow-up of data, is things like career progression, which I imagine also we would find quite a substantial discrepancies in.
You got lots of research to do, Dee.
Yes, we do.
Look, I love this. I think it's great. I mean, not only should people be doing it anyway and making it safe for everyone, but, it makes financial sense. So just do it. It's a no-brainer.
I always think from the businesses, even if you pitch it from a completely perspective of, what's going to give them the most money, it'd be ludicrous not to be inclusive because countless research has shown that inclusive workplaces are much more efficient and much more productive and bring much more money. So.
Dee, great to chat with you. Great research. Please keep us posted.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Dee Tomich from Monash University. And if you want to explore the research further, you can just search work participation disparities among LGBTQ plus Australians.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.